at Terminal B at Houston Airport. I get off the plane and Amanda turns around and says, oh, I don't think I have my phone, and look and does a quick bag check, right? And she looks in her bag and is like, oh, it's right here. Great. Amanda finds her phone. But in the process of her saying that, I do a pat down, pocket, pocket, check, check, right? I don't have my phone. And so then we say, hey, Miss Gate Agent Lady, I think I left my phone on the plane. And she's like, oh, I'd be happy to go look for it. What seat were you in? I said, this is our seat. She goes back, there's no phones there. Like, and checked all the seat back pockets, looked under, didn't see any phone. Would you mind if I go look? Not at all, but happy to take you back on the plane. Mind you, I'm wearing William in one of those like carrier things at this point. So William and I are just like walking all over trying to get this. Not on the plane. Right. Uh-huh. The last time I had my phone, we landed and I turned my phone out of airplane mode and I haven't seen it since.
Right.
Well, so now, oh yeah, so later last night we got home and it popped up again and it like started having service.
Maybe it is still on the plane and you missed it.
We looked everywhere on the plane. It's not on the... They lifted up the seat. Like, you know how the seat's a flotation device?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I learned how to use the seat as a flotation device because they lifted it up to make sure it hadn't fallen into the cracks.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so now I know how, in the event of a water landing, I am prepared to use my seat
you
as a flotation device.
You can sit on the exit row.
That's right. Yes. Finally. I lost my phone, but I get to sit on an exit row. Except that I have kids. Hey, so welcome back to another episode of Beyond Sunday.
Yes.
This is Pastor David Bowser, and with me, as always... It's Katie Phillips.
Hello.
And not here today is Patrick.
Aww.
We miss Patrick. Yep, he's home
Poor
with a sick kiddo tending to fatherly duty. So we are praying for Patrick and for his sick child and hoping everybody gets better there. But Katie and I, we're going to have some conversation today.
Yeah.
So if you're here to hear Patrick, well, I'm sorry, you're out of luck. But for those of you who are like, you know what, Patrick's really the one holding the show back, then we're ready to take Beyond Sunday.
He's really the glue that's holding it all together.
We're ready to take Beyond Sunday to the next level today.
I'm a little nervous with just the two of us here.
We've
He's
going to
keep
Katie.
Us on the rails.
We've done this before. It was
okay.
fine.
Okay.
Well, we're well prepared for this. But Kate, I think you've got a new story for us this morning.
I have a new story.
Are you going to do your sound for yourself?
Oh, yep. Do.
There
Here's
you go.
My new story.
Excellent.
Okay.
That's a little addition. That's a little new 2020.
What?
Only
because I'm the one sharing the news. Okay.
Right. I'm ready.
Headline says.
Headline.
Florida couple.
Excellent.
Arrest.
Is this like Florida man?
No.
Florida couple.
Florida couple arrested for selling tickets to heaven.
Wow. All right. What kind of tickets were we selling?
Tickets to heaven.
Is heaven like a club?
Golden tickets to heaven.
Oh, golden. All
uh-huh.
right.
They sold them to hundreds of people.
Is heaven a chocolate factory? Is that... We're getting
They sold the tickets on the street for $99.99. That's $99.99.
You know what? That is a steal
a ticket.
At twice the price, if I may be so honest.
Told buyers that the tickets were made from solid gold and that each ticket reserved the buyer a spot in heaven. Simply present the ticket at the pearly gates, and you are in.
Okay, so we've got a couple in Florida who are selling,
quote unquote,
golden tickets.
Yeah, and let me state they were arrested. Like,
oh, that's we know about this because they were arrested.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
How many of these tickets did they manage to sell before they
were?
Because I can't imagine that.
I don't know. That's what this
hundreds
said.
Of people
yes.
thought that this was
yes.
like a legitimate way to spend $100.
This yes, to hundreds of people, hundreds of people. And the man, Mr. Watts, Tito Watts is his name, said in his police statement, I do not care what the police say. The tickets are solid gold, and it was Jesus who gave them to me behind the KFC and told me to sell them so I could get some money to go to outer space. it just goes downhill from
You know what?
There.
The story is great, but behind the KFC, that's really the cherry on top. Like, that's the one where you're like, yep. If I'm going to meet Jesus, it's going to be behind a KFC. I will say this. There have been some times when I've eaten KFC, and I've thought I might meet Jesus. So I can understand Mr. Watts' concern.
I will say they were on something.
We know
yeah,
that
yeah,
now?
Yeah, it's in the article.
I prefer to think that he met Jesus behind
yeah,
KFC.
Yeah, nope. We just wanted to leave Earth and go to space and do drugs.
That's what they said?
That's what they said.
Well, I guess...
So, you know,
honesty
whatever.
Honesty gets you somewhere. Prison, in this case, but you know, it gets you somewhere.
I don't even know.
Do you think that...
They confiscated over $10,000 in cash.
$10,000.
Drug paraphernalia. And, the very last words, a baby alligator.
And a baby... Well, it's Florida, so sure. Why wouldn't you have a baby alligator? Wait, was all the $10,000 from tickets?
$10,000 in money, cash,
okay, yeah.
and drug paraphernalia.
So they could have been selling drugs on top of the golden tickets.
Sure.
Yeah.
So yep. then a baby alligator.
Because $10,000, if my math is right, that means they would have found 100 people... To pay $100.
Correct.
Which is just insanity to me. Uh-huh. That anywhere in the world you would find 100 people who would say, yeah, this ticket is definitely solid gold and this is going to get me to heaven.
Yep. I don't even know what the rate of gold is right now.
I don't know.
I mean, I can't imagine that these tickets were huge. Were they worth $99.99
in gold? If they could raise $10,000, I'm feeling like this is like capital campaign material right here. But then I'm like, oh, right, indulgences. Right. We probably shouldn't do that again. Yeah. We
kind of
said no to that once. All right. Well, on to a slightly less amusing topic. I don't know. It's still fun. So we were, their story was about getting into heaven, supposedly, right. I guess. But we're going to spend some time talking about death and dying today and what that's like. So as a background, Katie and I were here sitting in the office. My first day back in the office, Patrick's out, and we're like, man, what are we going to talk about? Right. And so we're kind of...
We don't know.
We're searching our life experiences and flipping through the news and trying to think of something. One thing that happened to me while we were on break is that we were home and my grandfather passed away while we were home with my family. And so we started thinking about, well, what does it mean for us to talk about death? What does it mean for us to think about the death of others, the death of ourselves? And we thought, you know what? We can talk about this for a while. Yeah, and maybe we'll have something valuable to say.
Maybe.
We hope so. I mean...
We'll see where this goes.
Yeah. It's entirely possible that we'll get to the end of this and say, you know what? We should have just stopped while we're ahead with selling the golden tickets. But we'll try. So let's start with a simple question.
Yes.
If you had to estimate, how many people would you say you've known... closely, who have died
in your life.
Like loved ones, friends, etc. How many people? Yeah.
Close to probably 10 to 15. Yeah. I mean, I don't feel like I'm there. That sounds bad. I feel like the older you get, the more people you know who are passing away.
Most of our friends
in
their 20s, 30s, 40s are not dying on a regular basis.
Correct.
Sure.
But I mean... grandparents older family members and all that happens.
Do you remember the first time that you experienced death?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yep.
This sounds like that reaction tells me that there's a story behind
this. The first time I remember, let's say
sure. Yeah,
because
obviously.
I was younger when my great grandmother passed away, but I don't really have very many memories of that.
Yeah.
But I have memories of when my dad's father, my grandfather, had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And I was... 12 years old. I liked the service part. I thought that was, wonderful. I was not a fan.
You were such a church kid to say, a 12-year-old to say, I really liked the service.
Well, and I sang at his funeral.
Okay,
it was this whole thing.
I bet if you polled 100 12-year-olds, most of them would not say that the service was their favorite part. Yeah.
But I didn't so much like the visitation and the... I didn't like seeing the body.
Mm-hmm.
That freaked me out. I don't know. It still kind of makes me...
So you're not a visitation fan.
I'm not a visitation fan.
I get it.
I go and do that, but it just kind of and a lot of times it doesn't look like the person to me.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel the same. I don't know. That's not my favorite part.
I get it. Yeah, the visitation has never been my favorite part either.
Right.
Yeah, for some people it's a very important part of the process, but that's not been...
Right.
It's not the part that I look forward to, right? I had this conversation with my family. We're starting to talk about funeral services for my grandfather because those are going to happen later on. And as we were talking about it, I was sharing my kind of distaste for eulogies in general, which maybe I shouldn't confess to as a pastor, but I guess you can just be forewarned that they're not my favorite thing. Because in my mind, everyone comes to a funeral. I think this is the same thing for a visitation in my mind. Everyone comes to a funeral... with memories and with visions of what this person was and who they were. And typically, a eulogy is someone else sharing their vision of who this person was. And I don't necessarily need to hear what your vision is, right?
Right.
And oftentimes they're beautiful and lovely and have funny stories. And those are all good things. But for me, if I'm coming to a funeral, I'm coming to hear about God's promises for me and for the person who has died. And I have my memories of the person... I don't need to hear someone else's memories to remember. Mm-hmm. No, that's not the same for everyone, right? Some people get a lot of closure out of seeing a body afterwards. Mm-hmm. Some people, it's a really meaningful way for them to express their own grief is to share those stories. So sometimes it's more about them than it is about... Mm-hmm. That sounds bad. It's more about their process of sharing the story than it is about people receiving it. And so as a pastor, I'm never going to say, no, you can't do a eulogy.
Right.
Well, that's not completely true. There might be people to whom I would say, no, you can't do a eulogy,
right.
given various circumstances. I'm not going to say people shouldn't do eulogies,
right.
but at my funeral, I don't need to have eulogies.
Right.
Right? That's just it's not my thing. It's not what I'm a fan of. But so let's back up. When your grandfather
yes.
died, you're 12 years old.
Yeah.
Had you had any experience with like death or understanding death before that, or is this like the first encounter of?
I mean, we had pets that died.
So okay, so as early as you can remember, that a pet died. Mm-hmm. How did your parents talk to you about death? Like, what did they say happened when your goldfish died? I'm assuming it was a goldfish because
that they went to heaven.
The goldfish went to heaven.
Yeah, like okay. Everything went to heaven when it died. Pretty much everything.
Universal salvation. Yeah. I love it. All right,
it's in heaven. We're gonna see it later.
Yeah,
all and right. We'd go bury it in the backyard or whatever.
How many goldfish are you waiting to see in heaven?
I don't know that we're waiting to see any goldfish,
but
definitely a few cats, a rabbit. Okay. a couple rabbits, actually.
Couple rabbits?
That got attacked by our dog.
Okay.
But whatever. That's... Yeah, that's very interesting.
I won't go into that one.
No.
Okay.
Anyway, yes.
Okay.
So I'll have lots of dogs and animals joining me up
okay.
there.
Oh, you'll be like Francis of Assisi. That'll be fun. Just have animals all over you. So was there a conversation around, I mean, you said they went to heaven, but was there a conversation about like how they died or why they died or what did that look like for you?
Yeah. I don't know that there was.
Yeah.
To be honest, like I don't know.
Just they're dead. They're in heaven.
Yeah.
They're dead.
Yeah. Then that was when I was younger. With my grandfather, when I was older, this is 12-ish. Yeah, he was in heaven. I mean, I don't know that there was ever like anything other than he would have been in heaven.
Yeah.
He was a Christian. He lived a Christian life.
Oh,
he went
that's
to
great.
Church.
Yeah.
He did all this stuff. He's in heaven and we will see him again.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of it.
Yeah. The first time that I remember talking about death was my grandfather also. I was in second grade.
Okay.
So, or I was getting ready to start second grade. It was right before second grade started. So I don't know. What are you, like eight when
right,
you're
right.
going to second grade, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
So,
7, 8, yeah.
Yeah. So I would have turned 8 right when this happened.
Right.
Yeah, I remember my parents like sitting down and talking with me because mm-hmm. we didn't have pets really up
right.
to that point. Like I think there was a hamster, but that came later if I remember. I don't know the
right,
timeline
right.
here, but I didn't know a lot about
right.
death. And so I remember my parents having a real like conversation about what does it mean that something's mm-hmm. died and it's not with us anymore and what does it mean that it's in it? And I was old enough to like ask questions
right.
and be
right.
like really confused but also
right.
like comforted maybe at the
right.
same time.
Yep.
And I think that a lot of ways most of us never really get past that early elementary experience, like the first experience we had of death,
mm-hmm.
however it was explained to us,
mm-hmm.
for most of us is where we stay.
Mm-hmm.
Because for most of the time we don't really want to think about it.
Right.
Like if you want to think of like a taboo topic.
Uh-huh. Well,
nobody wants to sit around and talk about
that. It's funny you say this, because I've noticed with...
I don't think any of this has been funny.
Well, no, not funny, but it's interesting, I'll say
right.
that. It's interesting that you say
okay.
this, because I am going through that with my son right now.
Oh, okay.
So, he's in third grade,
yeah.
and nobody's passed away, like,
mm-hmm.
in his immediate, like, family that he knows. Like, he's not experienced
Grandmas and grandpas
yeah,
all
no,
there,
all
yeah.
all here,
yeah.
we're good.
Mm-hmm.
And when he went to third grade Bible class...
Yeah.
this year.
Uh-oh.
Like, that's when it started.
Did
now,
I say something about
no,
death?
No.
Did I ruin
no,
it?
No, no. But he was very interested. Like, he's been asking questions for the last, you know, 6 to 8 months about what does it mean when we die? Like, where do we go? What happens?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've talked to him about baptism and you're a baptized child of God and da, da, da. We're going to heaven, the law, we need
yeah.
to live the life. And as soon as he got his Bible, the first thing he looked up, like, he went to the back of, like,
mm-hmm.
the subject index. He's like, heaven. I need to know everything there is to know about heaven.
Okay.
And, like, that was, like, his thing that he wanted to start exploring and
yeah.
talking more about. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Like, why are we, I don't know what to do with that, but we'll
yeah.
go with it.
Well, I think that's a really healthy way to respond to this, right? Especially if
right.
we're talking to our kids about it, is how do we let them explore some of this stuff?
Right.
On their own, like not to
right.
say like, oh, just go figure it out for yourself.
Right.
But how do we let them? I think oftentimes, particularly when it comes to death,
mm-hmm.
we want to shield others from it.
Right.
And this is the thing that I've encountered mostly as a pastor and have tried to carry over to my individual life as well, that death is not something to be shielded from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. That if in fact we believe, as we claim we do
right.
every Sunday, that if we believe that God is going to raise us to new life.
Mm-hmm.
The only way for that to happen
is through death, right?
Right. I cannot be raised to new life without dying.
Yep.
Whether that's dying to sin,
right.
which is a part of the process we believe, but it's also a physical death. I mean,
right.
Jesus had to go through a physical death. We
mm-hmm.
don't get Easter Sunday
right.
without Good Friday.
Right.
You know, that's part of the process. And I think too often we are too quick to jump to cutting ourselves
right.
off from
yep.
that experience of death.
Yeah.
And we like to think about, oh, they're in heaven now.
Right.
But we don't give our kids and ourselves
mm-hmm.
time to explore. They got to heaven because they went through this
mm-hmm.
process of death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm going to share the story of my grandfather because it's really I think it's a beautiful story of how he died. And like, if you want to imagine...
Am I going to need tissues? Because I haven't heard this.
I don't know. You might need tissues. Okay. Are you...
I don't know. I cry a lot, but go ahead.
Maybe. If you need tissues, we'll get you tissues.
Okay.
So, grandfather's 91 years old, has been on a hospice for about 16 months.
Okay.
And at a variety of points in this hospice process, we've thought, it's here, right? This is the end. And he's rallied several times and come back. William, my youngest son, is named for him. So William has two great-grandfathers who are both Bills, and so William got his name from both of them. And so we had been trying to find a way to get William up there, and this, the Christmas was going to be the first time to get William there. And so we all go up, we fly up there for the holidays with our family, Sophia and William and my wife and I were all there. And on Saturday, this is Saturday after Christmas, we're having Christmas with my grandparents, with my grandparents, his great, or William's great-grandparents. And William's in his little Santa suit, which, you know.
I saw this on Facebook. Imagine the a five-month-old. And
it's, it's adorable. Yes. So he's in a little Santa suit, and he's sitting on my grandpa's lap, Grandpa Bill's lap, and Grandpa Bill's talking to him, and we've got, you know, he's telling him what beautiful eyes he has, and just have this great, great time. We're celebrating Christmas together. The kids get to open a couple presents from great grandma and great grandpa. Sophia gets to give them both hugs. We had this pizza dinner. It was a local pizza place in Dayton that we all love. That like that was our family thing is that we'd order pizza from this. So he got to have pizza from that place. He got to have root beer. IBC root beer was always his jam. In fact, when I was a kid, he would let me pretend that I was drinking beer with him by having an IBC root beer.
Because
he would drink Budweiser and I'd drink IBC root beer. So he got to have IBC root beer. And then, you know, we all said goodbye and he said goodnight. My grandmother was in a rehab facility currently. And so they were not living in the same place. And so he went back to his house. He went back to the house with his with my mom and with his nurse. Got ready for bed because he was tired and he was ready for bed. Called my grandmother on the phone. As they did every single night while they've been apart, because they've been apart for like 6 months or so. My grandma's been going through this. Called her as he did every night, said a prayer with her, because every night they would call each other and say a prayer before bed. Said the Lord's Prayer, said I love you, and then fell asleep. And then didn't wake up.
Wow.
Right? Like, you know, that was it. And in my mind, I'm like, man, there's not a more peaceful and fulfilling way to have gone. But there are times where we who are left behind want to say, oh, but what if this, right? What if he'd been here for one more day? What if he'd been here for two more? What if he'd been able to talk to every single family member before he died? Well, over the course of the fall, he really had. Like, all of us had made our various pilgrimages back home. And I don't want to say, like, oh, he was just waiting to see William. I don't think that's the case. But in some way, like, William was the last one he hadn't gotten to see. He'd seen everybody else had made their way up to be able to to see with him, at least in my understanding of how the story had played out. Everyone had seen him, and he was ready to to rest. Because I think that my grandfather knew, in his heart of hearts, in the center of his faith, Grandpa understood that there was something better coming. And he had not been able to do the things that he wanted to do for a while, right? He was not as mobile as he wanted to be. He wasn't able to eat all the things he wanted. He wasn't able to go all the places he wanted to go. And God bless them. My mom and her sisters had done all sorts of things to be caring for him and to provide the best they could. But he's 91. And I think I think there's an element that Grandpa knew something better was coming. But man, how often do I watch families who do everything they can just to keep their loved one alive. Here? And I don't know that that's always the faithful thing. And that's a really hard thing to say. And I haven't found it, I haven't yet found the tactful way to say that to families, right? But I'm like, I don't know that the faithful response is to say that this is the best it's going to, or that, that you need to stay here, right?
Because we're selfish and we want you here.
Well, yeah, I think that's I think there's
what
an element
it is.
Of that, sure,
you know, I think that's really what it is.
Yeah,
is that I want you here because I don't know what I'm going to do without you. Not be, you know, like if you're if somebody's work is done, their work is done, and you know, I don't know.
This thought is just occurring to me right in this moment. So if this comes off as too callous or too heartless or anything like that, then I apologize to everyone in advance. But I'm gonna run this for a minute. I'm not a pet person, right?
Okay.
Amanda and I now have a cat. It's the first real pet that I've ever had. You were a pet person.
No.
You
I'm not the pet person. Okay. My sisters are pet people.
You had animals in your family.
I had animals in my family, yes.
Did you ever have to put any of your animals to sleep?
I did not. Yes, my family has.
Okay.
But they were, the dogs were older
mm-hmm.
and were closer to my younger sister.
That's fair.
So she went and took them.
Sure. So, but you've been around people mm-hmm. who have done that process. Mm-hmm. So this thought is occurring to me, and you know, maybe if one of our listeners has more experience with this, maybe we've got a vet out there or somebody who's right. gone through this process. It just occurs to me, right, that we love our pets.
Mm-hmm.
We love our pets as part of our family.
Yes.
I don't want to deny that at yeah. all. For many people, the pet is family, right? Mm-hmm. If you're mm-hmm. if you're single or if you don't have children like this, the pet is your family. Mm-hmm. And that's wonderful. I'm glad that you have that relationship mm-hmm. to support you. But we realize with our pets, in many cases, they've gotten to a point where it's no longer healthy or viable for them to stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
And we have come up with a way to let them pass, right?
To let
them die. And
yep.
I do think it's odd that we call it putting them to
right.
sleep
right.
rather than just saying, okay, we're going to let them die at this
right.
point. But all right, so we find
sure.
a way to put them to sleep. This is not advocating euthanasia in any way,
right.
shape, or form.
Right.
But I think there are a lot of things that we do just to keep our loved ones who are humans alive.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Without acknowledging the decline in their quality of life.
Right.
That people, you know, that in many cases people are not able to do the things that they want to do anymore. And
mm-hmm.
and in many cases they're never going to be able to do those things,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, I think that's one of the things I love about hospice is that
mm-hmm.
hospice allows people to kind of make those choices on
right.
their own. But even within that, there's an urge so often to make sure that someone's getting, well, they haven't been eating for 3 or 4 days. So we need to make sure that they're eating. Like, forcing someone to eat
mm-hmm.
is not going to solve mm-hmm. this problem.
Right.
The only thing that's going to solve this problem, in fact, is letting them die.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, now being older and having, you know, my parents are older, I'm
sure.
older, having conversations with my parents and with my in-laws about their wishes and
yeah.
what
oh,
they...
Absolutely.
I
yeah.
think that releases us.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're not like fighting, oh, dad would have wanted this. And I just know that, no, I know what my dad wants or what my mom wants or what my in-law, like they have told me, like, don't let this happen to
mm-hmm.
me. Don't do, you know, I'm like, okay, if that is like, I won't, you know? So I think having conversations with the people who are getting older and whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, that may die
mm-hmm.
in, within 10, 15, 20 years. Having those conversations now helps us prepare for that
yeah.
so that we're not doing everything to keep these people alive.
But the only way to have those conversations is to accept a certain comfort level with
yes.
death,
yep.
right? If we start from a place of death
mm-hmm.
makes me uncomfortable, I don't want to talk
mm-hmm.
about it, we're never going to have that conversation.
Right.
And that's a real tragedy
yeah.
because death is not something that we need to fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that at the root of this is a fear of death. And I don't want to say the root of it is a lack of trust in God's promises.
Right.
But it is a fear of death. Whether
yeah.
that's the process of how you're going to die
mm-hmm.
or the process of losing someone, all of it comes back to that fear
mm-hmm.
and that root fear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fear that we've been told we don't have to have.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We've been told
mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ conquered this, destroyed death, so that we don't have to have this fear anymore, so that we can live our lives to its fullest for as long as we
mm-hmm.
can, knowing that when our life ends...
Mm-hmm.
we'll be with God,
mm-hmm.
and it'll be better than anything that we ever had
mm-hmm.
on this earth. Right? The greatest that's still to come, or the greatest is still to come.
Right.
I think I said that backwards.
Right.
You
You're
get
fine.
What I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it.
And so, what do we have to do as a culture and as individuals to gain a comfort level with death? Like, do I just need to get up every Sunday and talk about death? I mean,
no.
That sounds like
no.
a bummer. But like, even in your family, where you know. It sounds wonderful that you have had those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you, if it comes to the place where those decisions need
mm-hmm.
to be made,
it's not,
not
be
everybody's
comfortable.
Not everybody's
yep.
going to be comfortable, and not everybody's going to be on the same page.
Correct.
I
can already tell you that that's going to
right. I mean, and that's
true.
No matter. And so, what is it that we have to do as individuals, and as families, and as church communities
mm-hmm.
to say, look, death is not the thing to be afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
Death is the chance for new life, I guess.
I wonder if it's the experiences you have and you allow yourself to have along
mm,
the way.
Mm-hmm.
Death with when I was 12 scared me.
Yes.
Like it was
yeah.
a scary thing for me. Death now is actually a comforting thing for me. I know
mm.
that sounds kind of maybe morbid.
No,
but
not at all.
It is. Like
you're talking to the guy
I know,
who's talking about
pastor.
How
okay. So no, it doesn't sound morbid to you. But we had Alicia Nelson on the podcast.
Yeah, sure.
when she went through the loss of Spencer, mm-hmm. That I grew so much as a person,
yeah.
spiritually, and for, emotionally.
Just as a reminder for yes. our listeners, right? Spencer was a child who lived for about 36 minutes.
Yeah, about 36 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had LUDO, which is lower right. urinary tract obstruction, and the only way he was living was in Alicia's mm-hmm. womb. So mm-hmm. she carried him until it was time for him to be delivered.
And knowing that he was going to
knowing
die.
That he yep. would more than likely die. God is a healer. He sure. could have made miracles happen.
Absolutely.
But knowing that that was probably the case.
Mm-hmm.
So Spencer passed away. And so that was a huge moment. Another turning point for me was when Ryan, my husband's grandfather, passed
mm-hmm.
away.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the room with him when he took yeah. his last breath. I held his hand. I sang hymns to him before he passed away. I mean, it was just this... just a beautiful moment. And mm-hmm. I've never looked at death as something beautiful mm-hmm. until then.
Yeah.
So I think it a lot of it also has to do with the experiences that we have along the way.
Sure.
Too. So I don't know.
Well, and I think we can be honest, right? So often death is not beautiful, mm-hmm. right? I mean, as we're having this conversation, we're also in the midst of whatever's going on with Iran yep. and Iraq and the United States and soldiers going into battle potentially.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, death on a battlefield is not beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like, let's not mm-hmm. Accidentally glamorize something, right?
Right.
You know, people who are killed tragically in car mm-hmm. accidents or in robberies or whatever
right.
might be happening, right? That is not beautiful. People who die in the line of duty as first responders mm-hmm. or who, whatever.
Right.
The experience of death is not always as picture perfect as what you experienced
right.
with Ryan's grandfather or with my grandfather, right?
right?
But what comes after death is still beautiful, right?
Right? Absolutely. That
even in that moment, even if your death is not beautiful, mm-hmm. the next thing is.
Right.
And I think we need to do a better job of getting at that and
right.
not skipping the death part.
Right.
I think we jump past
and not
death.
Sugarcoating it, and that it's not going to be easy, and it's something
yeah.
that's hard.
Yeah.
But the promise and the hope that comes after. Is worth it.
Yeah. And to be clear, like, we don't need to not be sad
right.
when people die.
For sure.
Right? Like, of course we're sad.
Right.
But we're not sad because they died.
Right.
We're sad because they're not with us
yep.
anymore because we're...
We can't pick up the phone and call them.
Right.
We can't
yeah.
go to them for advice. We can't do everything
yeah.
we've done before.
But we have that trust. We have
right.
that faith and that promise that the next thing is better.
Mm-hmm.
And that we will be, even in tragedies like Spencer's
mm-hmm.
death, right?
Right.
We have this trust that God says, Spencer, the next thing is better. And so we're absolutely broken
right.
at the reality of what we're having to face here
right.
in this life. And we're looking for comfort and
mm-hmm.
you know, desperately looking for a path forward in the midst of that grief. And Alicia was able to find that through
right.
great connections with an organization that opened her up to new possibilities. And that's all fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't grieve as a people without hope.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I think it's Paul that wrote that, right? We grieve, but not as a people without hope. We know that it's worth being sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth feeling that grief.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also worth holding that in conflict with
mm-hmm.
hope, which I think is why, I'm back to my eulogy thing here.
Right.
I think that's why I don't need eulogies.
Right.
Because eulogies don't point me towards hope.
Mm-hmm.
Eulogies point me back to
mm-hmm.
holding on to what was.
Right.
And maybe this gets back to my frustration with nostalgia, too, that we've talked about in previous episodes. But,
you
know, eulogies get us back to holding on to what was and not looking forward to what is and what will come.
Right.
And I want to be someone who's looking forward to what is and what will come.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I go to a funeral, I want somebody to get up and talk to me about Jesus.
Well, that's
and
the pastor's
tell me what
job.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is.
Like,
and so I
isn't there a eulogy and a sermon?
Yeah, I'm not saying the eulogy is the
okay.
only thing. I mean, in some traditions, eulogy is the only thing
okay.
that happens because it's not
okay.
a religious
gotcha.
Service. And so
gotcha.
That's fine.
Yep.
If it's not a religious service, that's fine. But at a religious service, yes, it's absolutely the pastor's
right.
job. For many people
mm-hmm.
who come to a funeral,
right.
the eulogy is more important than whatever the pastor... Or the expectation is that the pastor is going to give a sermon that also functions as a eulogy.
Mm. Gotcha.
Right? And certainly, if I have done my job, I feel like, this
right.
is now my take, if I've done my job as a pastor, I have either known this person leading up to their
right.
death, or I've spent time with their
family
and friends to learn
sure.
about this person. And I want to incorporate their life into the story.
Right.
But the story of the sermon is not, this person was great and we love them. The story
right.
of the sermon is, Jesus has raised this person to new life, and Jesus promises to do the same for
mm-hmm.
all of us.
For sure.
Right?
Yep.
So I don't know, have you ever been to a Baptist funeral service?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not like in a I've been to like a Church of Christ funeral service. Okay. I've been to like, what do you, like Baptist specifically?
I mean, Baptist is what I'm familiar with. Okay. So there are many, many Baptist funerals that end with altar calls.
Oh, yeah. No, nope. Never been to one of those.
They end with the idea of, we've seen this person's life and death, and now's a chance for you to accept Jesus and come to know Jesus so that you don't have to be afraid of death, right? Because if you're here and you're sad and you're afraid of death, you don't have to be afraid of death if you accept Jesus.
Now, in the Lutheran Church, we don't do altar calls, but I do kind of like the idea that it's an invitation for people to not be fearful. An invitation. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I absolutely do.
Sorry, cut you off.
No, you're good. And that's kind of what I'm getting at, right? I wouldn't do an altar call at a service either. Right. Except it's not our tradition. That's not how we understand the piety. But treating a funeral service as an opportunity for the people who are there to be reminded that we do not fear death because we can have a faith in Jesus Christ.
Right.
And I think what turns me off about the Baptist tradition is that it often is, you don't want to go to hell, so stop being afraid of going to hell and accept Jesus.
Of hell versus,
which is versus out of an embracing of a loving God who says, I've created you and I want to know you and I want to bring you up out of it, right? So, you know, I think there's a different approach to that.
Sure.
But there's an element where I'm like, like, what better way to celebrate the life of someone who in this life was a faithful believer than by encouraging others to be faithful believers? And, you know, The service, the funeral service, memorial service, whatever it is, doesn't need to just look backwards at the person's life.
Right.
And I think we do ourselves a disservice by doing that because we're not looking forward to what's coming. And it's a balance, right? Because some people are going to hear this and, you know, they're going to say, well, Pastor David's just way too callous and doesn't have any compassion for the people who are grieving and stuff. And, and I hear that. And I promise you, listeners and whoever's out there, I promise you that when I'm sitting with a family who is grieving, I'm just sitting with that family who is, like, I am with them in that moment. I'm not telling them, well, stop doing that because, you know, he's fine. Like, that is not what I'm saying. But I think that we need to do more work on the front end. You know, how are we talking to our kids about death and saying, death, letting them be scared and saying it's okay to be scared. And then we're assuring them of the promise, right? You know, if you walk in, you walk into the room at night because there's a shadow on the wall. You know, what's the first thing you do? You figure out where the shadow's coming from. And you try to explain, like, look, it's okay that that looks scary. I see that. You're right. That does look scary. But let me show you what this really is. Why don't we do the same thing with death? Why do we feel like, no, we're just not going to talk about death at all? Try to get your kid to go back to sleep by saying, just pretend like the shadow doesn't exist, Billy.
Exactly.
Right?
That's not going to work. It's fine.
You
got to
talk
about,
the shadow. Right. You've got to bring it into the light. Ooh, well, I'm sorry. This just became like a really beautiful little epiphany metaphor that I just developed here. I'm sorry. Continue.
Follow
I just had a moment.
Star.
Yep.
No, speaking of our kids and talking to our kids, I really think that that's super important because I don't know that anybody talked to me about death. I don't remember. So sorry, Mom and Dad, if you're listening and you did and I just don't remember.
We had this beautiful conversation. It's a moment I've treasured forever and she doesn't even care.
Right?
Yeah, I get it.
But
I'm confident that most of
the thing that I am most fearful about death is that this, I don't know if this is going to sound weird. But
the number of things that I've said that might sound weird today were Patrick's not here
to
keep us in the room.
The thing I fear about death, like I am not fearful of dying. Like I'm ready. Like
you
can come get me whenever you want. Like I'm good. But I'm fearful for my kids. And like I don't want to die now, know, or like in the next several years until they're older and they're adults and they know what they're doing, kind of, you know, like that's the part that scares me is that I don't want to leave them too soon. But I think that's all the more reason why we have to have conversations with our kids when they're little, because if something were to happen, I want them to not doubt and to not fear that they're never going to see me again. Like, do you know what I'm saying? And I think that's that is becoming more and more clear to me to have those conversations even when they're six or five. But just start planting the seeds because you never know what's going to happen. Not that I'm scared myself to go. I'm like, come on, like, do it. That's cool. I'm good. But I fear for, and not fear because I know they will be taken care of.
I know. I hear
But
that,
it just, you know, that makes me sad for them that if that were to happen.
If there's a piece of you that makes you anxious, maybe that's a better way to think. Like the anxiety of if I die, how are my kids going to respond to my death and how are they going to react to that going forward? Knowing that you've got family and friends who would care for the physical needs. Their physical needs would
I mean, if they have a dad, like my husband would be great. But, like, you know, I just...
You heard it here first, folks. Katie's husband would be great.
Yeah, he's great. No, but you know what I'm saying. Like, the, yeah. It's just that that isn't... That's an anxious spot for me, I guess.
No, that's reasonable. You know, I think my anxiety comes at the thought of my kids dying.
Right.
Right? Like, if I die... I don't know, for some reason I really...
Like, you're like, not, yeah, whatever.
That's not my concern, but, like, I do get anxious about, man, what if something, you know, and Amanda, was when we were pregnant with Will, was considered a high risk because she'd had a C-section and she wanted to have a traditional birth with William, and so that just made it high risk because there are things that come along with that. And everything worked out fine, but we got into the hospital, and for some reason... That was the first time that it, like, occurred to me what it meant to be a high-risk pregnancy. And for the, you know, this is one of those times when naivety has really been bliss. But suddenly, like, there are nurses everywhere doing this, and they're, like, talking about this, that, and I'm like, what is happening? Yeah. And so, in that moment, like, the death of someone else was like, no, like, whatever you have to do, like, keep this person alive. I don't care what, you know, machine, this, that, or the other, keep them alive. Like, that's what we're doing. Yep. And I think that I was in that mindset because I didn't do the work on the front end to be mentally and spiritually and emotionally prepared to handle whatever might come and to trust that God was going to be present in whatever might come. Because it is easy to talk about my grandfather being 91, saying I love you and the Lord's Prayer with my grandma, and then slipping away to sleep and saying that death is beautiful, right? It's easy to say that.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a lot harder to look at Spencer's story. Or to talk to soldiers who have, you know, watched their friends die next to them on the battlefield, or to talk to people whose moms died of cancer when they were 2 or 3 or 4, or you know, husband whose spouse or children died during childbirth. Like, man, those are awful and horrible situations that are ugly, and we do not want to sugarcoat those either.
Right.
But I think there's an element of doing the spiritual work on the front end to prepare ourselves to be people of hope, not to be people of joy or to people or to be people who don't acknowledge grief, but to be people who cling to hope. That hope continues to be part of that story. And so now I'm thinking of metaphors about doing the work on the front end and what kind of, you know, training things we can come up with. I've got like 5 different sermons that are coming out of this podcast. This is great.
That's
I got to write these down. You know, bring the shadows in the light. That's a good one. Yeah. Right? Do the work on the front end. That's another good one. Yeah. It's at least 2. That's... Half my work is done.
I know. Can you use them this Sunday? You're preaching.
Talking about baptism on Sunday. I'm sure I've got something there. Bring the shadows into the light.
Right.
I'll figure it out.
Well, yeah.
Oh, goodness. All right. So.
I think we did well without Patrick. Yeah.
Take that, Patrick.
Yeah.
Mr.
We stayed on task.
Yeah.
We didn't ramble a lot.
I probably did.
I mean, that's all right. It's great.
Except now we don't know how to end it.
Nope.
Do you got any recommendations? Any New Year recommendations? This is a little... A little behind the scenes, I guess.
Yeah.
This is our first 2020 recording session. Yeah. So I know we've released a couple or one episode, I guess, in the new year. But this is our first recording of the new year.
It is.
Any big New Year's plans, thoughts? You and I are not resolution people.
Well, I can't really do the recommendation yet, but next week I'm going to Disney Land with the kiddos. That's what we got for Christmas.
Are you checking out Star Wars Land?
Yes, we are. And the day we go is the day that the new Star Wars ride opens.
So you're going to you're going to the California, right?
Yes, we're going to California.
Okay.
And spending 3 days and super excited. The kids, I think, are excited. They don't really know what they were doing. Like, they don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
when you're like, you're going to Disneyland, they're like, oh, like, I'm like, no, this is exciting. And then we found YouTube videos of the rides, and they're like, oh, this is awesome. And I'm like, oh, for the love. Yes.
It just takes time.
So it does. So we're super excited. So my recommendation would be go to Disney, maybe. I don't know. I haven't been yet, so I can't really recommend it, but I hear it's great.
Excellent. Solid recommendation. All right. So, hey, if you liked what you heard, be sure to share this out with friends, family, whoever it is that you might want to. You can find us, of course, wherever skillfully and artfully crafted podcasts are available. Yeah. And if your New Year's resolution is to listen to more podcasts, we hope that you'll make us a part of that routine and spread the word. We are. We have a good time. Even when we're talking about less fun topics, we're having a good time. You can, of course, find us at our website, beyondsundaypodcast.com, and check us out on Facebook at Beyond Sunday Podcast. We are. Where? Oh, hey. The podcast resolution, in case we forgot about this, is that we're going to be releasing more video content on our Facebook page as well. So be watching out for new game. We have thus far had a present wrapping contest and a fruitcake tasting session.
Oh, both were such joys.
They were. The fruitcake, I stand by, not that bad. I don't know, Katie and Patrick, fruitcake haters, that's all right.
Yeah, my favorite.
But we've got some new stuff coming, and we're going to be getting that up on the social medias as well. So be sure to check that out. And we hope you have a great day as you take your faith beyond Sunday.
Yes, happy 2020.